This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Okay, good evening, folks. Welcome to the People Speak radio show here on BBS Radio. Got a very interesting guest joining us this evening, Jesse Ventura, a man who certainly doesn't even need an introduction. But before I bring him on, I just want to go over a couple of quick announcements. If anyone wants to join us here on the People Speak tonight, if you have any questions you want to call in with, you can dial toll-free internationally, 877-489-6350, or you can dial toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 888-228-4494. Again, that's 888-228-4494. Anyway, this is your host, Charles Giuliani. I'm filling in tonight for the usual host. In fact, I'm going to be filling in tomorrow and Wednesday night as well. We're having three shows this week with some really great guests. And just wanted to mention, you can listen to the People Speak radio show directly on BBS, usually every Tuesday and Wednesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. You can also come on to paltalk.com. There's a room dedicated in the government section for that reason. You can come and listen live right on Paltalk. Or you can simply go to www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. Again, that's www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to past shows in the iPod Ready Archives section. Again, the website is thepeoplespeakradio.net. Interestingly enough, you can also now listen live via satellite on your Nokia phone. If you want more information on that, again, just go to the website and you can find all that information out. Okay, with no further ado, let's go to our guest. We don't want to waste any time here. It's a very interesting guy. He has a lot to say. Welcome to the show, Jesse.
Hi, Charles. How are you tonight?
Not too bad, in spite of the fact that we're living in a fascist dictatorship, pretty much.
You really think it's that bad?
Well, we're not far from it, are we? I mean, they've certainly set us up for that, haven't they?
Well, it's interesting times we are living under, and if you... I think if you read things in history and you study any history at all, I think the thing that's been most amazing to me is I'm watching history repeat itself within a few decades in my lifetime now.
Sure. It's amazing.
You know, you used to have to read about things to have history repeat itself. Now it's happening between my age 18 and my age 57.
Right. Right. As a matter of fact, even more specifically, the past 8 years, the speed has just exponentially magnified. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, boy, as you have pointed out many times, you know, I've seen you say this on Larry King and even on Comedy Central, all the interviews I've caught with you, a very important point. There really is no difference between the two parties. You know, we see this trend with Democratic as well as Republican regimes. But under this current one, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, the thing is, between the two parties, is it's the system they've created. And, you know, and like it's when I tell people, look, it doesn't matter who runs from the two parties because you can change the names, you can change the faces. It's still, in essence, the control will be the political parties. And for people in the United States, we were warned of this. If you go back in our history, by George Washington, John Adams, and Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
They unequivocally warned that the downfall to the United States would not come from outside. It would come from within its own political system. And they warned us that when the political parties took control of the government, that could be the downfall. And we're in the midst of that right now.
Right. And all the while, you know, they have us focused overseas, you know, the great enemy, Al-Qaeda or whatever. You know, a few decades ago, or 2 decades ago, it was the Soviet Union, you know, always distracting us, looking overseas, not recognizing.
Well, you know what I find interesting? I travel to Los Angeles quite a bit now, and off and on, I always have. And for some reason, my drivers out there lately have all been former Soviet or Russian people.
Really?
And they're about my age. And I always ask them what their perception and what they were being told about the United States at the same time we were being told things about them. And it was identical. We were being told we had to stop the communist takeover of the world, and they were being told they had to stop the United States imperialist takeover of the world. And I often laughingly say to them, do you think the leaders got together and planned the whole thing?
I was just
going to
say, trading notes.
Yeah, trading notes or whatever, so that they would, you know, we would all be fighting with each other and hating each other all at the behest of them.
As they laughed all the way to the bank.
Manipulation of them, whatever it might be.
Sure, sure. Well, you know what I find most ironic is if you go to the, you know, to Pravda's website today, the former, you know, propaganda paper of the Soviet Socialist. Yeah, you go there now, and you're going to find more truth about what's going on in our own country than what we're finding about here with our media.
Well, I can't answer that because I don't read theirs. So, but I can tell you how disappointed I am in ours.
Sure,
I think it's terrible here. I mean, I live in Mexico now half the year. I live with those scary brown-skinned people that we're terrified
yeah.
of, who are responsible for everything bad in the United States.
Yeah, yeah. Another distraction.
I better say that's sarcasm.
Yeah.
So that no one takes me as for being that I'm serious about that. No, I live in Mexico now half the year,
mm-hmm.
and it gives me a great perspective because I get the opportunity to view the United States from the outside looking in,
right.
as opposed to the inside looking out. And when you get the opportunity to do that, you get a new perspective and one that isn't exactly favorable.
Yeah, yeah, it's unfortunate, but they've done a good job, haven't they? They've ruined our reputation internationally.
Well, you know what the most popular T-shirt is way down in Mexico that all the little kids wear, the teenagers and all that?
No, what's that?
Well, it's a picture of George Bush, and it has weapon of mass destruction. You know,
I love it. I couldn't agree more.
You know, you laugh over it, but in a way, it saddens me because my belief is that if you're going to truly be the world power, that the world power should not rule with a stick.
Right, sure.
I believe the world power should be above that. And
exactly.
that it shouldn't have to go around and threaten and rule through fear. Because to me, if you look at history, most of the regimes that have ruled through fear have always toppled.
Yep.
They've never survived.
Exactly.
We've become the very thing of where the United States is heading today.
Yeah. We've become the very thing that we were supposedly fighting against the past
yeah.
several decades, you know?
Yeah. Well, it troubles me that we're a first-strike nation now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since 9/11, our entire foreign policy now is that if we think you might do something to us, we're going to hit you first.
Preemptive strike, yeah.
Preemptive strike. And as the world power, I don't think you should be that way.
Right.
I don't think that's a good way to survive.
That's the very thing that encourages terrorism, you know?
Yeah, well,
in fact, that is terrorism.
You know what else I find ironic is, by definition, we've been practicing terrorism on Cuba for 50 years.
Sure. No question about it.
I mean, the CIA does things down there. They burn down cane fields. They blow things up. They attempt assassinations. They do all these things to Cuba. Well, aren't those acts of terrorism?
Exactly.
If they were done to us, we would call them that. Another interesting point. Do you remember I don't want to sound like I'm putting down the United States. I love the United States. I believe
same
I'm
here.
Trying to save it.
Right. Exactly.
Because Jefferson said dissension's the greatest form of patriotism. So when
right.
I dissent, I'm simply following Thomas Jefferson and what he believed.
Right.
What scares me today, did you see the movie Red Dawn?
Oh, years ago, sure. Yeah.
Sure, the one with Patrick Swayze, right? And
right.
Jet and the Wolverines, the U.S. gets invaded, and they're fighting them, you know, and we're all cheering for them, and go Wolverines, get those bastards and all that, right?
Right.
Well, think about it a moment. Jet today would be called an insurgent.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we're the occupiers.
Mm-hmm.
We're those guys that wore the red stars that came in.
Amazing.
And Jed would be an insurgent today. So today we would not like Jed.
Right.
Jed would be a troublemaker.
Unbelievable.
I don't get it.
That's the propaganda that you hear, you know. Why do you hate America? Automatically, right from the start, instead of addressing the issues you raise, they got to try to make you look bad by saying something like that. So
yeah,
I don't let them get away with it.
I don't say it because I hate America. I say it because I love it.
Right. Exactly.
It's my love of my country that I don't want. I want my country to be the best it can be.
I turn it around on them and say, why do you hate America? You're supporting the worst president in American history that's done more to tear our economy apart, you know, reintroducing torture and lying us into wars. He's the one that hates America.
Well, to me, it's a case that, as I said, Thomas Jefferson said dissension's the greatest form of patriotism, and people better start reading back and realizing that when you criticize or hold your government's feet to the fire, you will get good or better government. If you are a lemming and you go along to get along and you're quiet and you don't criticize your government, you will get bad government in the end. It's that
exactly.
simple.
I mean, that's the whole reason we were given the First Amendment in the first place, wasn't it? So that we can
exactly.
speak out against corruption and preserve our republic.
Well, you should see what they're doing in Minneapolis now. They're using the threat of all this national security so that they can keep any war protesters during the Republican convention off on side streets where they won't be seen really by mainstream media.
Yeah, free speech zones, huh?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
So what that means is, so outside the free speech zone, obviously, is a no free speech zone, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like today, I laugh, you know, living in Mexico half the year, they want to build this fence at the border, right?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, show me a 40-foot fence, and I'll show you somebody with a 41-foot ladder.
Yeah, right.
And
it's a joke.
And second of all, aren't we supposed to be the country that signifies peace and freedom?
Right.
Well, if we're freedom, why would we be turning ourselves into East Berlin?
Yeah.
By building
exactly.
fences and having military checkpoints at the borders and all of this stuff, people forget one simple thing, and you know what that is? Is that a fence today to keep someone out, 10 years from now might be to keep you in.
Maybe that's the whole intention in the first place.
I don't know, but, you know, fences work both ways. They're not just a one-way deal.
Well, you know, any government that targets
from either side can go across.
Any government that targets its own citizen in a war allegedly against a foreign agency, there's something wrong there. And, I mean, you can't even get on a plane today without them strip-searching you. If you dare say anything out of frustration against it, they'll pull you aside. You might wind up in Guantanamo the way things are going today. I mean, the people that they're supposed to be protecting, they claim to be protecting, are becoming the victims of this whole thing.
That's why I've came out and made the statement that the terrorists are winning.
Yeah.
Because they're not beating us on the battlefield. They can't touch us there if it comes to, you know, armed. Our military is the best there is.
Right.
But they're beating us in the fact that they're changing the United States, which is
yeah.
what they set out to do. And that's where the defeat lies, in that we're willing to give up our freedoms for supposedly getting government protection.
You know, the most outrageous statement, as far as I'm concerned, that Bush has come out with in the post-9/11 era, it was just a couple weeks after 9/11. He's speaking to Congress, and he says, the terrorists who attacked us did so because they hate our freedoms. And then he turns around through the Patriot Act and several other pieces of legislation he's passed since and trashes our freedoms. Now, what does that tell you?
Well, you know what? I'll beg to differ. I heard him say something that was scarier to me than that. Do you know what the worst thing I heard him say?
What's that?
Was on the brink of the Iraq war, at the press conference, a reporter asked him if he had consulted his father, meaning Bush Sr., and his response was, no, I consulted a higher father.
That, the God factor.
That, to me, was the scariest thing he ever said.
God told me to invade.
He now wants me to believe that he prayed to God and God told him to start this war and to
go in there. Don't they usually lock people up like that?
And what's worse than that, does this arrogant guy believe that somehow God answers him?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I've been on the planet for 56 years now, and God's never said a word to me. God's
like
never
said,
spoken
to
me.
Yeah, like I said, these are the people they usually lock up, right? Oh, he says God talks to him, and here he is.
Well, I don't
know,
but by that statement, he basically said that God told him to invade Iraq.
Yeah, like it's a religious
holy
war.
And I find that terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying. And that nobody called him on it.
Right. Oh, we've had plenty of times.
Yes, I need to be a reporter. Maybe that's the problem.
They really haven't. They haven't even made an issue out of that, and that's a major issue.
Well, to me, it's terrifying to when you have someone who believes that God talks to them.
Good heavens.
And to my knowledge, I know no one that God, the no one I believe, I don't believe God talks to anybody. He hasn't.
Certainly not telling them to invade a country, that's for sure.
Well, he's never spoken a word to me.
Right.
And I've been a pretty decent guy. You know, I treat my neighbor good. I treat them as I'd want them to treat me. And, you know, why don't he talk to me?
Yeah, if he was going to talk to...
I've been a governor. I've been a mayor.
Right. If he was going to talk to W, I think he'd have something different to say to him.
Here's the question. At what level does God begin corresponding with you? Because clearly it's not at governor level.
Yeah.
So it's got to be at a higher level than that, which leaves only president. I don't know. Does he talk to senators?
Yeah, right. Gee, I don't even hear the Pope say them.
I have a wide open race here in Minnesota that I could jump into for the Senate. If I can somehow be reassured that if I win the Senate race, I'll get to correspond with God like the president, I may enter that race.
That's a very unique
thing to experience.
Sure, there you go. That's something I certainly want to touch on later, too, your announcement that you may possibly be running. That's something I know a lot of people are hoping for. I hope I can convince you to move up to Massachusetts and run for the Senate here.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm a Massachusetts man now. You know, I'm a Harvard man.
Really?
Yeah, I taught at Harvard.
I didn't know that.
Absolutely, 2004. I'm a fellowship professor from Harvard, so Harvard's my school.
Wow.
All the way.
I had no idea. That's awesome.
Yeah. Let me tell you this, one of the most enjoyable times in my life.
Quite a resume there.
My experience at Harvard.
It's a nice town, isn't it? It's really...
I love the food. I love the restaurants.
Yeah.
I love the campus. I got an enjoyable being able to teach the brightest, you know, arguably the... work at one of the, you know, the premier university of the world in many ways. And anyone who's passing through comes through Harvard.
Yeah, that must have been quite an experience.
Did you see the movie Back to School with Rodney?
I didn't see that, no.
You never saw the movie Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield?
No, I never did. I've seen other films of his, but
where
not
have
that
you
one.
Been?
I know, huh?
That's a classic.
Too busy reading up on politics.
In fact, I request of you, go home and get the DVD Back to School.
I'll have to rent it, yeah. Oh, he's great. I always liked him.
Well, you will see what I got to, because my son came out with me just to visit, and he and I lived in our little dorm room, and it was just like Back to School with Rodney.
Oh, wow.
Because here I am, 50 years old, back at college that I never got a chance to go to.
So what did you teach
there? This time I'm not a student, I'm a teacher.
What did you actually teach?
Political science, John F. Kennedy School of Government.
Excellent, wow.
And of course my forte was third party politics. Who would know more about third party politics than the high priest?
You know, I want to talk about that in a second.
Don't you like that line? I like my title there.
Yeah.
The high priest of third party politics. You know who gave me that name?
Who?
Eleanor Cliff.
No kidding.
Yeah, she came out there and she referred to me on her website as, I like that title, the High Priest of Third Party Politics in America.
You know, before we go on,
I just
wanted to let everybody know, who maybe some new people that might have just tuned in. Again, this is the People Speak Radio, radio show here on bbsradio.com. We're also broadcasting through Pal Talk. Tonight we're interviewing Jesse Ventura. And by the way, he's the author of a new book, Don't Start the Revolution Without Me. Why don't you let the listeners know, Jesse, how they can get your book?
Well, they can get it anywhere. It's in all the bookstores, and it's on all the internet places, the usual places that you go to for books. I forget what they're all called because I don't know.
Oh, Amazon.com.
Amazon.com and whatever they all are. And this is a book that I wrote that I really didn't care. I asked for no upfront money or anything, and ironically, with two New York Times bestsellers to my credit, I was turned down by 24 publishers.
No kidding.
Yeah. Until we finally both found Skyhorse, which would do it, and they're with Norton Distribution, which is a huge distribution company, one of the biggest. So, that's what you care about after it gets published, is that it has an opportunity to be distributed.
Isn't that disgusting? You know, you have a reputation for questioning things and not blindly accepting what most of the rest of the public does. And, you know, across the board, pretty much, they blackball you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's some interesting things in this book because I talk about what happened. You remember when I got out of office and I was the hottest thing out there?
Yeah,
and
sure.
I disappeared, didn't I? Do you know why?
Why is that?
Well, I talk about it in the book. MSNBC, CNN, and Fox were all bidding for me, and I ultimately signed with MSNBC. And then when they learned I opposed the war in Iraq, I wasn't put on the air.
That was it. That was the end of that.
And,
yep.
and remember when Phil Donahue was on for that short time?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Well,
yep.
Phil was their highest rated show, and they pulled him.
Unreal.
Have you ever heard of a network pulling its highest rated show?
I should tell you something right there.
And see, no one.
But, you know, ironically
on
now,
the airwaves. Who was questioning the war in Iraq?
Sure. But even some of Bush's biggest cheerleaders now, like Bill O'Reilly, now they're starting to pull away from the war only because they're trying to save face. They realize everybody's against it now, so now they're acting like they never really were for it. And it's so crazy.
Yeah, well, that's who you find out who the real people are the ones that stood up before it was popular and spoke from their hearts. Or let's blame the Democrats, too, here. Because you know why the Democrats voted for the war, don't you?
Well,
the Democrats went totally political.
Yeah.
Here's what they thought. They believed that this war would be a walk in the park, that we would be greeted like liberators, and that once we controlled the Iraqi oil, that oil prices would go dramatically down.
Yeah, the very opposite.
Well, but that's what they believed. That's why the Dems went along, because they thought politically, if this does come true, the Republicans will destroy us.
Mm.
If the war goes great, we liberate Iraq, we get the oil, and the prices go down, we're dead in the water.
Yeah.
So the Democrats made a political decision. Rather than voting their conscience or voting what they truly believed in, they said, well, here we are. We got to vote for strength of the party now. We got to rally the wagons around the Democratic Party and go along with this war in order to have any chance in the upcoming elections of holding power or getting power. Well, then, of course, everything went sour. We weren't greeted like liberators. The war has turned into the quagmire that it is, and there's no foreseeable getting out now, and the Dems are left holding the bag with the Republicans, and now all you hear is the spineless Democrats now complaining. Well, how do we get out of there? Well, excuse me. They can get out tomorrow if they want to. They're in complete control of both houses. They control all the money.
They do.
The Bush veto means nothing. All they have to do is withhold the money to the war and the war is over.
America needs to wake up. In fact, we have a caller here in a moment I want to go to. But America needs to wake up to this ugly reality that we really do have a one-party system, and it's called the money party. And
right.
Both sides of the fence are dancing to the same tune at this point, and it's very obvious. I mean, I don't know how people can miss it anymore.
If you go to their national conventions, the Dems and Repubs, you'll see the same lobbyists at each one.
Sure, exactly.
They pay off both sides, so they don't give a damn who wins. They've already bought their way into the program on both sides.
Yeah. Basically, we're offered a choice between puppet A and puppet B is what it amounts to.
Well, I like to refer to it as Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah.
I refer to it as going into this grocery store and you go to the soft drink department and the only thing available is Coke and Pepsi. There's no root beer, there's no orange, there's no Mountain Dew, no 7-Up, none of that.
Some selection,
Yeah, you get Coke and Pepsi, two colas, one slightly sweeter than the other.
That's all
it makes your choice. There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, you want to go to our caller?
Sure.
Okay, we've got, what do we got here? Tom in Texas. Are you there, Tom?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. I had a question for Jesse. Jesse used to be a wrestler. I used to love watching world wrestling because it encouraged young people to rebel, dissent, question authority. But then ever since they started up with this John Cena and trying to encourage young kids to enlist in the Marines and be part of Bush's invaders, I just couldn't stomach it anymore. And I was just wondering if Jesse had any inside information on how Vince McMahon feels and whether there's any chance we could see world wrestling get to the point where it would support the freedom-loving people of America instead of being shilled for the Pentagon trying to get our young people to give their lives up for the plutocracy.
Well, first of all, Vince will do basically what the public wants. And Vince is very perceptive to that, and that's why he's been so successful all these years in creating the WWE or the WWF and what it is. Do I have any way of doing that? No, none whatsoever. In fact, the story in my book about me going to Vince and my ultimate run for the presidency, I actually brought that proposal to him prior to writing the book. And unfortunately, Vince didn't want anything to do with it. So he could have offered, it could have been the opportunity for me to run for president if he would have gone along with the plan that I proposed to him. It would have been very interesting and a novel thing to do. You can read all about it in my book. But no, I can't. And as far as Vince going along to get along, let's remember something. You know, Vince has had a lot of bad publicity, so he wants to go along with the flow right now for the big part, and he wants to be very, very pro-American, and he doesn't want to rock the boat at all, because if you go back in history, in 1990, Vince McMahon was actually indicted for steroids in wrestling, which I found ridiculous, but it happened. And it's now you have the same condition in pro baseball, but it shows the selectorized law enforcement. McMahon had to get lawyers to defend himself to keep from going to prison. Why isn't Bud Selig being indicted for the rampant use of steroids in baseball? After all, he holds the position of the head of baseball, and it all happened on his watch, the same as it did in wrestling under Vince's watch.
Yeah, it's so hypocritical, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's selectorized law enforcement, law enforcement.
It really is, sure.
You know.
Anyway, Tom, was that it, Tom in Texas?
Yeah, I was just, if there's any way that WWE could back Jesse for president, that could be a force that could change the world.
Vince wouldn't do it. I took it to him a year ago, last spring, as a matter of fact, a year ago right now. And unfortunately, he turned me down, and yet you saw that he had on Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and John McCain. So Vince is not part of the third-party movement. He's part of the Democrats and Republicans. He's not a rebel at all. He's
right.
part of the system.
Definitely.
Okay, thanks for... I'm sorry to hear it, but thanks for the info, Jesse.
There you go.
Hey, thanks.
Appreciate
it. Thanks for the call, Tom. Yeah, it's unbelievable, but I'll tell you, you know, you wouldn't need funding. You wouldn't need multi-million-dollar corporate handouts if you ever announced your candidacy. You'd be
I'd need ballot access in all 50 states. That's the difficult part. And you need enough money to do television ads, because with the public's general perception, if you're not running ads on TV, you're not a legitimate candidate.
Right. Right.
So you've got to have enough money to run ads on television.
That is true, unfortunately. And so what it boils down to here is, you got to have 6-7-figure income and already be well established and have a lot of support behind you. But that support usually comes, unfortunately. That's where the money is, from big corporate America. And
I'm not saying it can't be done, because when I ran in Minnesota, I only raised $300,000.
Really?
I did that with $50 and $100 contributions from regular citizens. I didn't take any PAC money. I didn't take any special interest money. And in my entire 4 years as governor, I never met with a lobbyist.
No kidding. That's awesome.
So, and you know what else I did that I'll match up to any governor in probably the last 50 years in all 50 states that I bet none of them can say?
What's that?
Except me. I appointed 73 judges while I was governor of Minnesota. I did not know any of those judges prior to my getting into office.
That's awesome.
I named to be a judge on their merits, their qualifications, their education. And they went through a rigorous system that I had of some of the best lawyers in Minnesota who volunteered their time to be my screening committee. And
that's
they would send me the top three candidates.
Right. That's
and
awesome.
I never knew one of them prior to appointing them.
That's how it used to work and how it should supposed to be still working. But
That's what happens if you elect an independent and one who is not part of the system.
Exactly. Yeah, America really needs to get away from this left-right paradigm swing.
Also remember, cronyism is alive and well in the
very
Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, very much. Anyway, we've got a question that came in via Pal Talk through the text. We got Mike from Southampton, England. He asks, do you think that the Bush administration is planning another 9/11? Because he hears most people say that they can feel it in their bones, that Bush will do this to either stay in office, declare martial law, or get his war on to invade Iran. What do you think on that?
Well, to my answer to that, and I hate to be pumping my book, but read the last chapter of my book.
Ah, there you go.
Read the last chapter of my book. I could very well end up being, they may call me Jesse Nostradamus. I wrote the book in a unique fashion, and it's okay now because it's been out a while. The book is all factual until the epilogue or the last chapter, and then without telling the reader, I do a chapter of fiction of a look into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And my look into the future parallels very much what your emailer just sent.
There you go, folks. So check out his book. Go to the last chapter. I can probably guess pretty much. all you got to do is look at the past, and that tells you a lot about the future, doesn't it? You look at their tactics. You look at their little game playing, and that's all we've gotten from them. It's just lies. And
people need to understand that, and the cliche is, old as the day is long. If you don't read history, you're destined to repeat it.
Exactly.
And we're not reading anymore. We're simply watching television and being brainlessly, brainwashed by, look at the, they've already caught the media in payola with the White House and the administration.
Sure.
There's been payoffs on policy. All the generals they send out now, it was admitted they all met for briefings with Rumsfeld, and those were all your talking heads in the build-up to the war.
Mm-hmm.
This was an architect plan going to war, whether we, the citizens, liked it or not.
Bush personally hired a media firm with taxpayer money to help push his programs like No Child Left Behind, for example.
Exactly.
What a scandal.
So how can we possibly give our media any credibility today?
Right.
They've been bought off.
Right.
They should be ashamed.
I mean, no administration...
Walter Cronkite should be coming out right now condemning them.
Sure. No administration in American history has had more reason to question government actions than what we have, you know, now. The reason we have now. And yet, you know, you virtually hear nothing about it. Nothing.
Because they're all, hey, read my book and find out how the CIA has someone implanted in all state government.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that when their operational status and their mission statement says they're only to be operational outside the U.S.?
Sure. They're in violation of their own charter.
Exactly.
And it, talking about
and yet
media.
I write about that, and I write about the when I got into office and I had to go down in the basement of the Capitol and face interrogation by 23 members of the CIA, and public radio questions whether I'm telling the truth or not, until the CIA, when questioned, admitted that it happened.
Unbelievable. And you know,
and
talking
that's
about
all in my book. You
talking
know?
About media manipulation, I mean, the CIA itself has been directly involved in that for decades. I'm sure you've heard of Operation Mockingbird, for example.
Sure. There's it goes on and on and on, you know. So for the media to at all criticize us or criticize me, I laugh when they do that and say, what credibility do you have?
Right. I tell you what, we need to go to a short break, and when we get back, we have Mark from Illinois. We'll take his call, so stick with us, folks. Short break, and we'll be right back here on BBS Radio.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
This land is yours.
Join us on the People Speak radio show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by After Downing Street.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall, by the relief of fast summer.
Okay, everyone, welcome back to the show. You're listening to the People Speak Radio here on BBS Radio Network. And again, the website is www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. And we actually have another caller, so why don't we go ahead and take that call at this time. We've got Mark from Illinois. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hey, Charles. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I don't think I mentioned our guest again. I'm sorry. Our guest, of course, is Jesse Ventura. Did you have a question or comment for our guest?
Well, you know me from our room. And hi, Mr. Ventura. How are you this afternoon? I told you at one time that I wrote the Obama campaign because he has maintained throughout his campaign until he actually became the nominee that he was not going to be beholden to any special interest groups. And almost immediately after he became the presumptive nominee, he started to kowtow to everything that AIPAC wants, or what he thinks AIPAC wants. It hasn't really gotten him anywhere. But I wrote a letter to him saying, you said you weren't going to be beholden to special interest groups, and now you're sucking up to AIPAC. And I finally got a response, and it's kind of a form letter. Thank you for contacting me regarding campaign-related issues. I mean, basically, it's like, I can't talk to you about this particular subject. And it seems to me that no matter who you put in there, that no matter how well they speak, or no matter how they suddenly change your opinions on it.
I agree wholeheartedly. The system corrupts the people. You know, most of your elected officials, when they start off as city councilmen or state representatives or whatever it might be, and they climb this ladder of public service, as they call it, and being a career politician, they eventually sell their soul to the system, because with these two parties, they have to do that. To climb the ranks of these two parties, you've got to sell out to the system they've created. And so it does not matter, as I said before, the names and the faces can change. It makes no difference. The system remains intact, and it's a system based upon the concept of panhandling and bribery.
Yeah, unfortunately, it really is. Okay, thanks a lot, Mark, for the call. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. But thank you for listening. But it just seems to me that someone that comes out as an agent for change is immediately going to the strongest lobby in the United States, which has pretty much put us in the position that we're in financially. And
well, yeah, it is.
I'm talking to them.
It is a big concern. I tell you what, Mark, hold on 1 second. Mark, we'll let you go because we got other callers and questions coming
sure.
in, but he can answer you.
Let me respond to
them.
Yeah, definitely.
Go ahead.
Democrats and Republicans, they have no credibility. They will sell out to whatever it takes. When I first ran for mayor of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, it was a nonpartisan election. I went against a 25-year incumbent. The two parties co-signed letters calling me the most dangerous man in the city and to vote for the old 25-year incumbent mayor. Well, after I defeated him 67% to 33%, 3 weeks later, these two parties then separately came courting me to join them. After just a month earlier, they called me the most dangerous man in the city. Now, all of a sudden, they want me to join them, and I declined because I said I didn't need you to get elected. Why would I join you now?
Sure, exactly. Oh, they can't stand people that they can't buy off.
Exactly.
You know, you're just a big troublemaker to them. So keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Let's go. Well, actually, we got another text question that came in. This is from Jesse in Canada. Asks, Mr. Ventura, do you think that the American people will actually fight back against this tyranny?
I don't know. I wrote my book in hopes of waking them up somewhat. I call it the lemming mentality, where they just march in their own little lives, and as long as everything's good today, they don't look out or see what's happening around them. And people are so apathetic to government, and they always tell you, well, I don't have time to pay attention. Well, You pay attention to your job 5 days a week, and the government takes the fruits of your labor for two out of those 5 days. Don't you think that's enough to make you pay attention to what they do?
Yeah.
It ought to
exactly.
be. So people have to start paying attention to what's going on and get actively involved. And it doesn't mean by going down and joining the Democratic and Republican caucuses, because all
no,
that's going to do is continue with
change.
The same system.
Exactly. That won't change a thing.
Nope.
And, you know, some will say, I do my part. I go to the ballot and I vote. Yeah, that's not doing it either. You're just voting the next monkey puppet, you know? I mean, it's not going to change at that level. Let's put it that way. We cannot afford to be spectator sports with this anymore. It's not a spectator sport, politics. Certainly not now.
I don't
afford.
So we need to take, as the title of my book says, don't start the revolution without me. Well, a revolution doesn't have to be violent. It can be a revolution, hopefully, at the ballot box, if you truly believe we still have free and open elections, which are
yeah.
now coming into question also.
Right. There's a lot of ways of fighting back. It doesn't have to necessarily involve, and hopefully won't have to involve, physical fighting. I mean, we can just stand up, take a stand, expose them, and simply not go along with their program, you know. Maybe I'd love to see a national strike. I know those have been successful in ages past in many countries. I'd love to see something like that, or a boycott of the big corporations that are funding our politicians and controlling them. But anyway, we have another... What's that?
Go ahead.
Oh, yes, we have another caller. Billy from Georgia... this is another 9/11 related question here. He says, do you believe that Israel had a hand in the 9/11 attacks?
I don't know. I don't know who did what, but I know that I'm not satisfied with the answers that you get, and I know that I'm not satisfied with the fact that when you do ask questions, you seem to be labeled unpatriotic and you get attacked over just simply questions. And I come from a world where asking questions is good. I've always
right.
believed that if you don't know something, you ask questions until you do know. And there's nothing wrong with that. And what might seem stupid to someone else, if you don't know, it's certainly not stupid to you. And that's the way I was trained in working in demolition in the Navy, was that when I was trained in demolition, they said there are no stupid questions. If you don't understand, ask.
Exactly.
And I think that's a good policy
sure.
to have
right.
when you're working with demolition. But, again, it's a case of I'm concerned over the fact that we're not even allowed to ask about 9/11, and I'm very concerned now after studying the 9/11 Commission on all the things that they didn't do rather than what they did do.
Right. Well, you know, I always
and
like
I'm
to point
tired,
out...
You know what else? I'm tired of the government forming a commission and then expecting me to fully believe what they find.
Yeah, exactly. The government
the
investigating the government.
Now they've done it with this one.
Yeah, sure. It's rigged. It's obvious. But this is what I like to tell people. You know, when you study things like 9/11, it's not so much to know exactly what happened. It's to know what didn't happen, you know. And the
yeah.
official story didn't happen. I mean, it's not the way they told us. It's a lie.
Do you know what the thing is that most concerns me about it?
That.
Having been a Navy frogman and a member of the SEAL team community, as it's called today, I understand that there are positions in government where failure is not an option.
Oh, sure.
And I feel that in our air defense system, that is one of the places where failure is not an option.
Right.
Now, clearly, if you believe what they told us, our air defense system failed miserably that day. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. If that being said and that being the case, why was no one fired or demoted?
Right.
Not one person lost their job or was demoted over 9/11. Well, clearly...
A lot of them got promotions, too, for that matter.
Well, if you don't want an investigation, don't fire anyone.
Yeah.
But if you start firing people, then you're going to have investigations. So the simple way out is don't fire anyone, and you'll have no investigations, and the world will move on.
Right.
How come nobody got fired? That's the question I'd love to ask.
Sure. I mean, this was a major breakdown
over 9/11.
How can four planes fly around for nearly 2 hours and nothing is done to stop any of them? Three of the four hit the targets.
And nobody loses their job.
Mm-hmm.
Not one person demoted. Not one
nobody
person.
Nobody even yelled at or reprimanded. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing.
Right.
Nothing.
It's just so sickening. Anyway, let me go to, this is a question that I was going to be asking you myself. This one comes from Fred in Canada, and he wants to know why you didn't seek a second term as governor.
Well, again, I'll refer back to my book. That's one of the reasons I wrote it. Is the main reason I didn't seek a second term was my wife's health.
Okay.
When I got elected, she contracted Epstein-Barr mono, and then while I was elected, it evolved into this chronic. And chronic fatigue is real, and it's a very difficult thing that they deal with pretty much their whole life, I think, from what I know about it now. So it's a case of her health will always come first for me and my relationship with her over holding any public office. So I made the decision not to run again because of the fact that I wanted to get her out of the political arena, which seemed to it bothered her tremendously when the Minnesota media attacked her children.
Well, Jesse, you set a good example, not only as a politician, but as a husband as well. That's fantastic. That's how
well,
it should be.
Well, it's just, I'm not saying I'm right or wrong, but that's my choice and the way I'll live my life is that my wife means more to me than holding any public office.
Well, I'd call that right.
Okay.
That's great. That's admirable. That's fantastic. You know, I remember you saying something, shortly after you did leave as governor, did you not say something to the effect that you were disappointed, you know, that you wanted to go in there and make a lot of changes and you found that there's a lot of barriers in your way or something to that effect? You were kind of disappointed?
What you find out happens is that the Democrats and Republicans, you're their worst enemy. And if I were to go in there as an independent and if I was extremely successful, well, then there'd be other independents that are likely to get elected. Because people will say, gee, look how successful he was. So their job was to make sure I was not successful. Again, it shows you the people can suffer. It's all about their power in the party.
Right.
So in other words, let the people suffer rather than let this guy do some good.
Yeah, that's the prevailing.
That's how it works.
Yeah, that's really sad. What, we're running out of time.
Well, let me finish and say this. You know the bridge that fell in Minnesota?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
Well, in 1999, the first year I was elected, my commissioner of Minnesota Department of Transportation, L. Tinklenberg, and I came forward with a plan called Moving Minnesota. It was a 10-year plan that would have fully funded transportation and roads for the whole decade. Right?
Yeah.
The Democrats and Republicans completely ignored it. They wouldn't do a thing with it. And somehow in the back of my mind, I think, you know, all I heard was the media here in Minnesota saying that they hadn't passed a transportation bill in over 30 years.
Unbelievable.
Well, the point was because I put one forward, they wouldn't say that.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
sure.
And in the back of my mind, it looms with me, had they paid attention and had they passed this transportation bill, which
probably wouldn't
funding,
happen.
Repair, and all that,
mm-hmm.
Maybe that tragedy wouldn't happen and those 13 people would be alive today.
Sure.
Who died
in the last,
the bridge collapsed.
Yeah, that was a travesty. In the last minute or so, just tell us, are you still considering, I think you implied that earlier, that you're still considering running for the Senate?
Yeah, there's a U.S. Senate race here, again, Norm Coleman against Al Franken, the Democrat, and I already defeated Norm Coleman for governor. He's the incumbent, and it to me, it's wide open. They already did polls, and I'm at 24%, which is only 3 points lower than I was when I won governor. I was polling 27% when I won the governor.
Well, all the power to you, sir.
I haven't even declared candidate yet.
I know you got a lot of people behind you, and I hope it works out. I know a lot of people hope it works out as well.
Well,
that's about
the answer will be this. If I so decide, it's a personal one. If I want to decide to live that life again.
Yeah, I hear you.
If I decide I don't want that, I won't run.
Right. But anyway, I want to appreciate you. I want to thank you for coming on. I appreciate you coming on. It's been a great interview. Wish we had more time, but we certainly have covered some good ground. And, you know, thank you for the great work you've done. Just coming out and speaking the way you have against corruption and, you know, things like 9/11 has done a great service. And I know it's cost you a lot of, you know, unwanted attention as well, but who cares, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
I can always
got a nation burning.
I can run off to Mexico.
There you go. I hear you.
So it don't matter.
I might join you.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot.
Hey,
my
thank you.
To do it again.
You bet. Appreciate
bye-bye.
It. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Okay, folks, that's about all the time we have for this evening. I just want to remind you, tomorrow evening at the same time, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be your host again, Charles Giuliani, and our guest is going to be former Professor Stephen Jones, physics professor from formerly working with Brigham Young University. And he's going to be talking about his investigations into the collapse of the Twin Towers at Ground Zero. So you don't want to miss that. So we'll see you tomorrow night, same time, on the People Speak Radio. And again, their website is thepeoplespeakradio.net. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll see you tomorrow.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief fountain, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.